from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the one and only vice presidential debate held last night in Farmville, Virginia, saw a good night for Republican Mike Pence, who made the case for change.
At a time of great challenge in the life of this nation, the campaign of Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine has been an avalanche of insults.
But it might not have been so helpful for his running mate, Donald Trump, who was hammered by Democrat Tim Kaine.
Donald Trump during this campaign has called Mexicans rapists and criminals. He's called women slobs, pigs, dogs.
The debate also saw testy exchanges on Russia, criminal justice, and abortion, and we'll break it all down with political experts and preview Sunday's presidential debate and take your calls and emails. It's all next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Republican Mike Pence was by most accounts the winner of last night's vice presidential debate. He proved himself to be a smooth and strong debater, though he chose not to defend many of Donald Trump's statements and positions. Pence had many opportunities to do so as his opponent, Democrat Tim Kaine, went aggressively after Trump for comments on women, abortion, and Russia. For his part, Kaine was criticized for his feisty style and frequent interruptions. In this opening hour, we discuss the debate, and we have three leading journalists with us to do that. Actually, we have also an academic and two leading journalists. Jennifer Marola, I want to introduce, who's professor of political science at the University of California, Riverside, who joins us from there this morning. And welcome, Jennifer Marola.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you. And also glad to have Sahil Kapoor, who is national political reporter for Bloomberg. Welcome, Sahil Kapoor.
Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Darren Samuelson, who joins us from Politico. He's senior reporter for Politico. Welcome, Darren Samuelson.
Good afternoon.
Good morning here, and good afternoon to you in the East Coast. And let me begin, Jennifer Marola, with you. And let's begin by kind of an overview, a political science overview, if you will. Debates are notorious for not necessarily moving the needle much. That not only includes vice presidential debates, but presidential debates as well. What we saw yesterday, though, was an exercise that seemed to many of substance versus style. Mike Pence, as I said, was generally regarded as the winner of the debate because he held his own. He contrasted to Donald Trump in terms of style, was measured, was thoughtful and reflective, whereas Tim Kaine was very interruptive, almost perhaps as interruptive as Trump was, and was described as often being smug and so forth. What is really more important, do you think, in terms of the body politic? It may not move the needle much, but substance, style, what do they see most?
Well, you know, we haven't studied very much in political science to what extent substance matters more than style. You know, we find that they both matter, and they matter in different ways for different people. And so I think you're right. Overall, the, you know, wisdom this morning coming out is certainly that Pence did a much better job. You know, he came across as a statesman. He was calm, cool, collected, folksy. You know, he actually looked at the camera when he was speaking to people, which is very important. You know, and Kaine did come across more of as an aggressor, which is the traditional role that the vice presidential candidates play. You know, and he was more likely to interrupt, as you said, and he wasn't really good. You know, he didn't look at the camera very much, so he wasn't really effective in that way. You know, on substance, they were probably more evenly balanced. You know, Pence basically was trying to make the election a referendum on the Obama administration. You know, he was painting a picture of the economy getting worse. America's position in the world has gotten weaker. You know, the immigration system is out of control. Whereas Kaine was focused much more, as you said, on attacking Trump for many of the things he said on the campaign trail that have been incendiary. And, you know, asking Pence to defend his running mate, you know, which, you know, Pence didn't really take the bait on that.
And Pence has been strongly criticized for not defending his running mate enough or not coming to Trump's defense, period.
Yes, but I think it probably was wise, right? A lot of those statements are hard to defend, you know, so I think he deflected them, you know, didn't answer things that he thought, you know, would just get him into hot water. You know, it's some things he did defend, for example, you know, I think on the statement of whether women should be punished for having an abortion, he kind of said, oh, you know, Trump isn't a seasoned politician. He kind of just didn't know what he was saying.
Not a seasoned politician like you and
right,
Hillary
right.
Clinton, yeah.
But the important point that you raised is that, you know, most of the time, you know, I think they both did what they aimed to do during the debate. And that is not really going to have much of an effect on outcomes. You know, perhaps if someone made a big misstep, it would move the needle a little bit. But I really don't expect that this is going to shift, you know, the polls in much way at all. I mean, even presidential debates, as you said, very rarely have much effect. You know, they might move public opinion a point or two, but then that will shift again, you know, with other events in the campaign trail.
Yeah, well, they are constantly shifting as this campaign goes on. And Hillary Clinton did gain from the last debate, and she's going to be debating in a town forum on Sunday. Jennifer Morola, again, is professor of political science at UC Riverside. Sahil Kapoor is a national political reporter for Bloomberg. Let's go to highlight some of the issues that came up last night with you, Sahil Kapoor, and also with the other two who were with us this morning. We also have Darren Samuelson on the line here. And let's talk first about tax policy. I'd like our listeners to hear a clip from last night's debate. Democrat Tim Kaine here returned frequently to the topic of Donald Trump's tax returns.
Donald Trump started this campaign in 2014. He said, if I run for president, I will absolutely release my taxes. He's broken his first promise. Second, he stood on
he stood
on the stage last week. And when Hillary said, you haven't been paying taxes, he said, that makes me smart. So it's smart not to pay for our military. It's smart not to pay for veterans. It's smart not to pay for teachers. And I guess all of us who do pay for those things, I guess we're stupid.
I guess if you're using, Sahil Kapoor, the old idea of the pugilist metaphor here, Kaine landed some pretty serious body blows there, didn't he?
He did. I mean, Kaine very studiously went after Donald Trump's weaknesses, and surgically so. He echoed, to a remarkable extent, he echoed Hillary Clinton's favorite talking points on these things. And this was the upside of his, you know, his sort of slashing, interrupting, abrasive style last night, which clearly the viewers didn't like in the polls. And you know, for that reason, I think, among others, pronounced Mike Pence the winner of the debate. But Kaine did land some blows in that regard, and we see a new ad from the Hillary Clinton campaign today that's kind of exploiting that. All the things that all the attacks that Kaine launched on Trump that Pence wasn't quite able to defend, and there's a long list of them. There are a number of things that Kaine brought up, like Trump's calls for mass deportation, restricting Muslim immigration, opposing any kind of Social Security benefit cuts, calling Judge Curiel unqualified to do his job because of his heritage, suggesting NATO is obsolete, saying Japan and South Korea should be able to get nuclear weapons. There was just a litany of things that Kaine said about Trump, attacks that Kaine launched on Trump that Pence wasn't quite able or willing to defend.
Maybe it's a problem of defending the indefensible in some people's minds, huh?
Right. I think there was a Washington Post editorial that said exactly that. So, you know, look, part of the thing to know here is that Pence is kind of reflecting of many Republican voters who don't agree with everything Donald Trump says, but on some gut level feel like he's for them and are willing to vote for him regardless. There was a little bit of that reflected, I think, in the debate, but it was also jarring kind of the extent to which Pence was, you know, he sounded nothing like Trump on some issues, like Russia, for instance. He talked about Putin as a small and bullying leader, someone whose provocations need to be confronted. Trump has never said anything like that. He's only really had praise for Putin.
Let's actually hear the two candidates clashing on Russia and later Vladimir Putin.
You got to be tough on Russia. So let's start with not praising Vladimir Putin as a great leader. Donald Trump and Mike Pence have said he's a great leader.
When Donald Trump and I observe that, as I've said, in Syria, in Iran, in Ukraine, that the small and bullying leader of Russia has been stronger on the world stage than this administration, that's stating painful facts. That's not an endorsement of Vladimir Putin. That's an indictment of the weak and feckless leadership of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Well,
I must say, Sahil Kapoor, of all the things that they tangled on, that may have been one of the most polarized in last night's debate.
I think so. I think that's an issue that the Hillary Clinton campaign has been going after Donald Trump on very aggressively. They've even tried to push this boundary into raising questions of whether Trump, given his bankruptcies, is somehow indebted to Russia. There's no evidence of this, but again, because of the New York Times, seen 1 year of his tax returns. There's a lot more that we don't know about it, and that's another issue, the issue of tax returns that, as you pointed out, Tim Kaine was hammering him on over and over and over again, and it's hard for Pence to defend that because Trump is the first major party nominee since the late 1970s who is not releasing a litany of years of tax returns. And There's that, and then there's a $1 billion loss that he posted, and nearly a $1 billion loss, I should say, he posted in 1995, that the Clinton campaign is using to goad him, to kind of bait him into lashing out, because they see that as their ticket to victory. They see that as disqualifying him with college-educated women, white women, suburban women, who is, you know, who are essentially the last pot of votes up for grabs that Trump can gain with. But showing his thin skin, in their view, hurts him with this block. And the recent polls suggest that they're probably right in that calculation.
Sahil Kapoor, again, is national political reporter for Bloomberg. And let me bring Daryl Simonson into this, who's senior reporter for Politico. And Daryl, when we talk about the constant hammering that Cain did on the tax returns, of course, it was, if anything, made even more highlighted by the fact that he said Donald Trump made a promise. He made a vow that he would show his tax returns. What's striking, though, in terms of hammering back was we heard from Pence about Iran and the Iran treaty over and over again. And how much does that resonate, do you think, by contrast with the American people?
I think the Iran talks would maybe resonate a little bit with the establishment Republicans who have been skeptical of the Donald Trump world and a lot of these national security officials, people who vote with national security in mind and defense in mind have been actually shifting into Hillary Clinton's campaign. You've seen this, you know, with major dignitaries or, you know, major former officials who served in the previous two Bush administrations who have endorsed or are raising money for Hillary Clinton or, you know, doing various things to try and help a Democrat in crossing over. So, you know, hearing about the nuclear deal is one of those points that obviously you hear over and over again among many failures, according to the Trump campaign. Obviously, the Iran deal largely negotiated during John Kerry's term as Secretary of State and sort of in the second half of the Obama administration. Hillary did help tee it up early on. So trying to pin the blame really on and going after that sort of consecutive third Obama term, which is another point that you hear over and over from the Trump campaign, trying to, you know, capitalize on typically where American voters do go, which is to just shift parties after 8 years. But obviously in a campaign that has been unorthodox on so many other levels, the fact that that's an issue here and a question now, yeah, I don't know that that resonates quite the same.
Well, foreign policy did play a more central role in this debate than it did in the first one, I think, between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. In fact, as you pointed out, there were a lot of misstatements of facts over at Longwood University by both candidates. But you said Pence flubbed the multiple foreign policy points. He said Iraq has been overrun by ISIS when, in fact, it's losing ground in Iraq.
Yeah, no, there's been a couple of really recent instances in Ramadi and in Fallujah where, indeed, ISIS is going backwards, and Pence pushed the envelope there. Certainly, as we fact-checked last night's debate, I think we had a dozen fact-checkers in the room, and we pumped out about 20-plus fact-checks in the course of the night. We found foreign policy to be the one area where they both really had some issues and some problems sticking closer to the truth. You had Tim Kaine sort of talking about that personal mount Rushmore, and obviously a prepackaged line that the Clinton campaign had given him. And I think while it's certainly the case that Trump has praised Vladimir Putin on various occasions, he called him a tough cookie in one interview not too long ago, he hasn't really embraced, nor do I think he would be putting up on his own South Dakota Wall of Fame, you know, Kim Jong-un or Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein, anywhere near the way that that the Democrats would propose to make it look like right now. So, yeah, they certainly had some took some liberties with foreign policy, not something that we saw much of in the first presidential debate. I'm sure we're going to get a lot more detail on that in the final two presidential debates going forward.
You know, Darren, you mentioned prepackaged lines. There were quite a few of them, and I think more of them from Kaine, weren't there?
Yeah, I think Kaine clearly had overprepared. He seemed like he had been going to debate 101 and really had been practicing line and line and line. And I thought that Mike Pence, the way he kind of responded and joked about that, made him come across definitely a little bit more natural and more appealing to the television audience. It didn't look very good to have so many scripted lines coming out of Kaine the way that he was presenting himself there on the stage. If you're going to have these pre-scripted lines, you've got to kind of wait for the right moment to deliver them. And his timing just seemed off from the very beginning. he definitely knew, and a lot of people do watch really the only 15 of the first 15 or 20 minutes of the debate, and then they move on to other television with a good baseball game going on last night, especially. So I would think that Cain probably was trying to jam it all in there in the first 15 minutes. I'm sure that's what his advisors were telling him to do. You know, again, it came off a little bit odd and strange, just to constantly interrupting Mike Pence, something, of course, the Republicans have done here today in prepackaging their own video of all of those moments when Tim Kaine interrupted either the moderator or Mike Pence on the stage. So,
yeah, I wonder, in fact, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but okay. I wonder if it hurt Kaine because he was sort of running over the moderator. I mean, you think about what happened back in the debate between Hillary Clinton for the Senate in New York against Rick Lazio, famous debate where he kind of got up in her face, or at least faced her physically, and it really hurt him to a great deal. Again, there's that whole we're going to talk about in the next hour relationship of gender and politics. I think at that point it could have been hurtful to Kaine. I mean, she was trying to kind of say just give him a chance to finish what he's saying, and didn't seem to be getting far with Kaine.
Yeah, Tim Kaine is definitely, I mean, on the campaign trail, too, he's really come across as an authentic communicator, someone who really likes policy and likes to get down in the weeds. He's, you know, being talked about as America's dad. I think there's signs that are being held up at his rallies. I mean, he is a really nice guy. And if you go up into the Capitol and talk to Republicans, they typically will say very, very, very nice things about Tim Kaine. So to see him on the stage in the role of the attack dog was certainly not a place that he's very familiar. He obviously has had some nasty Virginia campaigns running for governor and senator, so he has had to mix it up. But I don't think that's really his style. And, yeah, I definitely feel for the moderator, too. You can't really win in this situation. I've seen articles criticizing her for letting them debate too much and not really interjecting. And then I've seen other articles saying, you know, she should have stopped trying to steer the conversation at various points to the topics that she wanted to. I think you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
You are saying exactly what I have experienced as a moderator time and again over this over a quarter of a century behind the microphone here. But I want to give other people an opportunity to weigh in here. Our listeners, in fact, are invited to join the program. And let me tell you how you can do that. Our toll-free number is available, and you can call us and let us know your thoughts about last night's debate. And also any questions you might have are all welcome as well. Toll-free number is 866-733-6786. You can call us now, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Again, the number for your calls, 866-733-6786. You can also weigh in and let us know your thoughts or have any questions you might have by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Many ways to become a part of this program. We invite you, of course, to be part of the program. Let me go back, if I may, Jennifer Merola, to you. I keep thinking about the things that were not touched upon in last night's debate. For example, Mike Pence has a record when it comes to LGBT issues that certainly Tim Kaine could have gone after, but didn't. I mean, there were many things that he did go after, obviously, but I was surprised that that didn't even get into the mix.
Yes, I think part of that, it was a bit surprising, but part of it is that his job, you know, for this debate was really to attack Trump more so than to attack Pence. So where Pence and Trump had records that overlapped, you know, he would tend to go after both. But he didn't go after Pence on, you know, those types of issues, I think, because he was trying to keep the focus much more on attacking Trump. You know, so that was at least my read of why we didn't see much discussion of that last night. And it was somewhat limited because I think some of the topics, right, were decided ahead of time. And it is just this one time that the candidates are debating. They did cover, much more ground than we saw in the first presidential debate. In part because there will be more presidential debates where they can cover other topics.
We are going to go to your calls and emails. I wanted to hear a few more clips, though, from last night, just so listeners can get a sense of the policy differences and some of the content as opposed to the old horse race stuff here. And criminal justice and police bias was indeed another contentious topic last night. Let's hear a clip.
The bad-mouthing that comes from people that seize upon tragedy in the wake of police action shootings as a reason to use a broad brush to accuse law enforcement of implicit bias or institutional racism, and And that really has got to stop.
People shouldn't be afraid to bring up issues of bias in law enforcement. And if you're afraid to have if you're afraid to have the discussion, you'll never solve it.
Well, one thing that was noteworthy there, Sahil Kapoor, I mean, as contentious as it got in the clip we heard, was they did agree on the need for police reform. They both did.
Well, that was another interesting moment where Mike Pence said we need criminal justice reform on a national level. I have not heard Trump say anything like that. I'm not quite sure, you know, what sorts of reforms Trump wants other than his sort of frequent refrain of you know,
law and order.
More law and order, exactly. The law and order candidate, we need to, you know, we need to crack down, we need to get tough, all that stuff. What you pointed out there, that clip you just played, it's very interesting in that it highlights a growing divide on the issue of institutional racism and policing and a national debate about that that I don't think we've seen in a very long time. We certainly didn't see it in 2012 or 2008, despite the presence of the first African-American major party nominee on the ticket. I don't think President Obama brought this up nearly to the same extent that Hillary Clinton is aggressively doing so now. And Trump has moved his party essentially in the opposite direction. There were significant factions of Republicans, including particularly the libertarian side, that were interested, you know, that was interested in criminal justice reform, and now it's kind of fallen by the wayside. So, that did come up, and I think that has been a major focus of, the 2016 campaign on both parties.
It's definitely back in the mix. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up here was the dueling on foundations. We're coming up on a break here. But Mike Pence responded to Tim Kaine's litany of Donald Trump's controversial statements by raising Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables comments last month. Let's hear it.
I mean, to be honest with you, if Donald Trump had said all the things that you said he said in the way you said he said them, he still wouldn't have a fraction of the insults that Hillary Clinton leveled when she said that half of our supporters were a basket of deplorables. That she said they were irredeemable. They were not America. I mean, it's extraordinary. And then she laid one after another ism on millions of Americans who believe that we can have a stronger America at home and abroad, who believe we can get this economy moving again.
Darren, we're near a break here, Darren Samuelson, but I think it's safe to say that Pence scored fairly sizably on that.
I think he scored with his base, and I think Tim Kaine probably scored with his base on the basket of deplorables, insult-driven campaign. I think you talk to Democrats, they definitely see Donald Trump as someone who has no business being in the White House, and they see his supporters as people who are sort of part of that basket of deplorables. But absolutely, if you are Mike Pence and you're trying to excite a base that has been depressed by everything from Donald Trump's performance in debate number one to the expectations that they had that the WikiLeaks was going to come out with the end-all be-all leak on Tuesday morning at 3 a.m. East Coast time to end Hillary Clinton's campaign, and that didn't happen. That was depressing to a lot of Donald Trump supporters. So, yeah, I think a comment like that probably riles them back up again. And you're certainly seeing that as you see Donald Trump on the campaign trail. You know, he's certainly getting enthusiastic crowds still out supportive of him, too.
So. All right, we are going to continue with Darren Samuelson, with Sahil Kapoor and Jennifer Merola. And you will hear your calls and emails when we return. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we're talking about last night's vice presidential debate here on the Forum program this hour. Voters had a chance to see and hear Republican Mike Pence and Democrat Tim Kaine face off in the only vice presidential debate of this election. We're getting reactions to the debate from a panel of political analysts and from you, our listeners. And again, there are a number of ways you can join the program. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, talking with Darren Samuelson, senior reporter for Politico, and Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter for Bloomberg, and Jennifer Merola, professor of political science at UC Riverside. Let me bring a caller on here from Baton Rouge. Stephanie, join us.
Thank you. I would like to know why the Democrats pick one or two words and then they blow it out of proportion. Like, he didn't call every woman a pig or anything else. I mean, not every woman. Okay, number one. Number two, what's more important, his income tax, because he paid the Social Security and everything else on his employees, or Hillary's misuse of the emails.
Let me go to Professor Merola on this. Jennifer Merola?
Well, this is a great question. And I think the first thing to think about is that the candidates are trying to win over different groups of voters, right? So you are correct. Donald Trump certainly has not, you know, kind of had those insults against every female, right? It's been a few cases. But they think, you know, the Democrats think by bringing up those examples, it will turn off certain groups of female voters. At the same time, right, what we know is that people tuning into the debates, you know, are watching those debates through partisan lenses, right? So whatever Tim Kaine is saying and the attacks he's making against Trump and Pence will resonate among Democrats, and it may rally them and get them to the polls. However, Republicans who might be watching the debates, they may be turned off, right, by attacks against their own candidate, and that will further strengthen, right, their resolve to show up at the polls. And so, you know, these candidates are, you know, attacking their opponents. In some cases, what that will do will kind of increase the support among, you know, their base. And maybe they'll win over a few people that are undecided that may happen to be tuning into the vice presidential debate.
Let me go back to the caller for a moment, if I may. Excuse me, Jennifer Merola, because I'm interested, Stephanie, in your response not only to what you just heard from Professor Merola, but also to the idea that, look, this is politics.
Yeah, and I guess the thing is that Donald Trump is not a politician. And a lot of his words have been taken out of context by politicians and used against him, and there's no truth in what they're saying. And I heard the debate last night, and I looked at the thing and open-mindedly, because I am a woman, and I look at this open-mindedly. But I don't see any truth coming out of the Clintons' things, because all these things they're saying about Hillary, we've seen. And for her to be careless with our national security, couldn't even give her an opportunity to be able to be president of the United States without a security clearance.
All right. I thank you for the call, and we will indeed take more of your calls. Let me go to a caller. This is P. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yes, I am interested to know why we are talking about style of debate instead of content of debate. For example, we're talking about Kaine as being scripted, but we're not talking about Pence and the fact that he hardly answered any questions at all.
Well, actually, let me read some comments here from listeners that pretty much take the side that you've just articulated. Tasha writes, Kaine was prepared and had actual content to his answers. Pence avoided questions and denied Trump, saying things that we've all heard him say. Steve writes, Pence was lying through his teeth, but he looked really good and composed while doing it. Kaine came off as all too eager by repeatedly bringing up Trump's taxes and building up his friend Hillary Clinton. Pence looked better lying than Tim Kaine did telling the truth. The reality here, Darren Simonson, let me go to you on this, is that style all too often matters as much as substance. I'm sorry to say that quite so boldly, but, you know, you go back to the first debate of them all between Nixon and Kennedy. People heard it very differently on radio than when they saw it on television.
I'm about as big a policy wonk as you could get, you know, and have written in depth on everything from the Pentagon to global warming. And, yeah, no, I would love to see the candidates themselves debating the nuances of those topics, but it just doesn't really happen in presidential debates. They're going to cover it. They're going to talk about their talking points on the topic. But, you know, the moment they get into 10-point plans, you know, one, you got to fact check the 10-point plan because, of course, there's, you know, partisan parts to it. There's the reality check of everything that they're proposing and what it would happen to it in Congress and with the courts. And the other side's got a competing plan, which, you know, again, I think the American public craves policy, but they do indeed want to sort of see, you know, what these two candidates are like on a stage next to each other. How do they react? How do they sort of handle, you know, a tense moment, a tense situation where they're asked a tough question? And, you know, they read between the lines to see what kind of a leader that would be. So, yeah, I think people always say they want policy, and I agree that it would be great to get it. But inevitably, you know, we are talking about people who are leading not just on the policy front, but the way that they project themselves around the world. You know, definitely with Mike Pence. The other factor here is, you know, he's obviously not just thinking, I think, about this election right here, but, you know, what his political future may hold if Donald Trump doesn't win. He's someone who considered running himself for president in 2016, and should he lose, I think he becomes, you know, along with Speaker Paul Ryan, a front runner, someone that we inevitably will start talking about in 2020. So the way he was handling himself on the stage last night, not answering the questions and the points that Tim Kaine was putting in front of him, one of the reasons there was, you know, he didn't want to create talking points or campaign ads that could be used against him, you know, come Iowa, New Hampshire in the years 2019 and 2020. I hate to even have us thinking about that, but these guys are.
Yeah, you have to wonder to what extent Donald Trump felt he was upstaged, and maybe Mike Pence was looking toward 2020 or looking toward his future there. Sahil Kapoor, let me just go back to a policy question and what you think came out of it, and that is the argument between the two, the arguments that were pursued where immigration was concerned. Especially, I was struck by the fact that in the first debate with Secretary Clinton and Donald Trump, and in this debate, the Syrian refugee question did not come up. It seems to me that the Republicans could have scored points by talking about all the, certainly not with people who want to take in refugees, but with many Americans who are afraid that there may be jihadists among those refugees. Nothing was mentioned in either debate that I can recall. But Sahil Kapoor, what about immigration? I mean, how did they square off on that in your mind?
That is a striking thing to me as well, that in the first presidential debate and the vice presidential debate last night, as you pointed out, immigration didn't come up, because immigration is arguably the single biggest issue of this campaign. Donald Trump started off, sparked his campaign with a call, like a fiery, inflammatory call for restricting immigration, and that was, you know, his ticket to the top of the Republican primary. There is a very powerful nativist sentiment and a very powerful sentiment of, you know, deport the people who are here and restrict future flows of legal immigration. And the Democrats are moving in the exact opposite direction. Hillary Clinton is moving considerably to President Obama's left. She is proposing to protect his executive actions, along with legislation that does comprehensive immigration reform and a path to citizenship. She's proposing to protect his executive actions and expand them to a group of people that the White House concluded would be illegal to cover under their deferred action and work permits program, specifically the parents of Dreamers or young people who are here illegally and have been protected. So she wants to move to President Obama's left, and Donald Trump is moving far, far in a more restrictionist direction than party leaders like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have called for. So it's a huge issue in this election, and I think underlying all of this is the fact that the United States is changing demographically. It's becoming it's on a path to becoming a minority majority nation, and you know, the election of the first African American president reflects that paradigm shift, which, you know, has clearly made an impression in the minds of lots of voters. And by the way, I should add, the Democratic Party is becoming more reliant on Hispanic votes, which is part of the reason it has moved in such a pro-immigration direction.
And speaking about the first African American or black president, I was also struck by the fact in both the first debate and in this vice president, one and only vice presidential debate, the Democratic candidates hit hard on the birther history that Donald Trump had. And yet, doesn't seem to necessarily be weighing in as much as they would like it to with the American people. I wonder, how do you read that, Darren Samuelson?
The birther issue is one that you hear played up by the Democrats, the Clinton campaign, President Obama, obviously. I was at a Congressional Black Caucus annual dinner about 2 weeks ago in Washington covering Hillary Clinton's campaign, and it was repeated over and over. I mean, that was right on the heels of Donald Trump's sort of backing away from the birther thing, yet blaming Hillary Clinton moment. You know, it's an issue that people just kind of keep in the back of their mind who are voting. African-American voters certainly are going to turn out in large numbers for Hillary. She needs, you know, Obama-like numbers, I think, to really do well in states like Florida and Virginia, North Carolina, key battleground states. And so the more that she can point to Donald Trump delegitimizing President Obama, the better it will be, a good reminder, again, to maximize those numbers. I don't think Donald Trump is going to do as anywhere near the numbers that he's promising that he'll do with African-Americans.
I don't think that Hillary Clinton is necessarily going to pull as many voters of African-American background as Barack Obama did. There's going to be a margin there, to be sure. It's just how big it is the real question.
Exactly. Yeah, I think she's trying to recreate the Obama coalition with respect to millennial voters as well, and Hispanic voters. Those numbers are definitely not going to be where they were in 2008, let alone 2012, let alone 2008. So it's a matter of maximizing them as best as she can. And an issue like the birther controversy that Trump just continued to flail with, and obviously it launched his political career back in 2009-10 period, it's going to stick around him, even though he, said he put it to rest. The fact that he blamed Hillary was certainly, a nod to his own supporters and to, a lot of the people who are behind him that, he maybe isn't quite ready to do this, but he's just, he's kind of signaling that he's willing to push it off because, he is now a politician. He may have not been a politician in the past, but, he's on the national stage running for president of the United States. So Donald Trump is now, no doubt, a politician.
And we'll get another caller on air. Adam, thank you for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Sure. One of the most frustrating things for watchers and listeners is the constant interruption of the moderator. And I'm wondering, in terms of structure, has anybody considered having one microphone live and one shut off when someone's given 30 seconds to speak? And if somebody interrupts, just cutting off their microphone so the other person can finish?
Not a bad idea, but Jennifer Morello, you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, that does sound like a great idea. What we know is that, Americans have, turned off a lot from politics because they do feel like it's become so, it's not civil anymore. And part of, we see that with all these interruptions that we see during debates, and the dynamics are a little bit tricky, especially when you're dealing with situations where you have people running for office like Hillary Clinton, who is not the standard candidate, right? She's the first female running for president under one of the major party labels, right? And then we had a female moderator at the debate last night. And so, once you add gender to the equation, right, these dynamics become even trickier, right? It can be a challenge. It may backfire on you if you interrupt, a female candidate or a female moderator. And I think we see some of that, right, with the poll numbers for Clinton after the first presidential debate. I don't know to what extent that hurt Tim Kaine last night when he was interrupting the moderator. It wasn't as extensively as Trump was doing during the first presidential debate. But these are real issues and things that I think candidates need to think about moving forward.
I think this lack of civility, unfortunately, has almost become part of the warp and woof now of American politics. And it's disturbing. I'll say that editorially because there were times last night when I thought I was watching Fox News, and Allegra is our next caller, and she feels that both candidates were interrupting to a great degree. Allegra, join us. Wait, excuse me. Let me get Allegra on here. I'm sorry.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay. So, yeah, I was very frustrated of how both candidates were interrupting so much that, I was listening on radio, so I have a slightly different perspective, but I had a very hard time hearing what they were saying. And I actually felt, maybe because I was on the radio, that Pence actually interrupted even more, maybe because I felt he did so in the beginning more. But I felt like the moderator, in the beginning, she wasn't really doing anything about it at first. And I wish she had stepped in sooner. Although then when they started just talking over her, then I guess as a woman I had a reaction, here is this woman trying to intercede, and they're just talking right over her. But I also wish that the debates weren't always put in terms of who won and who lost. It just seems to go back to that whole Trump thing of having winners and losers, and instead of just talking about the actual debate points.
Well, thank you, Allegra. I appreciate your opinion here, and thank you for voicing it. And I want to read some comments that are coming in. Actually, this first one from Sean is about the debate format. He says, there seems to be an issue with how vice presidential debates are done. In my opinion, they should be about evaluating how these two candidates would do as president, since a vice president could be called to do just that. But the VP debate instead just focused on each one defending and answering for their running mates. I think that does us all a disservice. And back to immigration, with a listener writing about Tim Kaine on immigration. This listener says Tim Kaine doesn't have a plan for immigration reform that is acceptable to the American people. All he has is something fuzzy called comprehensive immigration reform and the principle of keeping families together. When has it become the role of government to keep families together? And John writes, on abortion, I'm surprised that Kaine did not mention Pence's signing into law mandatory funerals for any fetus, including miscarriage, which is not enforceable and serves nothing by idealistic appeasement leading to it being overturned as unconstitutional. Let me get you on record here, Sahil Kapoor, about the abortion debate. Pence was, could have been predicted and expected, passionate, one might say, in his defense of life as he sees it, as a pro-life candidate and someone who is opposed to abortion. The fact of the matter, though, is that on that score, I suppose Kaine didn't attack as much as one would have expected. Could it be because Kaine, as a Catholic, and faith did come into the whole debate and was mentioned in the whole debate, as a Catholic, was singled out for going along with abortion, even though he believes it's wrong by principle of his faith?
Right. So Kaine has been conflicted on this one. He's, you know, as you mentioned, he's a Catholic. He's very rehearsed in explaining that he is personally opposed to abortion because of his faith, but he doesn't want to make, you know, he doesn't want to outlaw it. He wants women to be able to make that decision. And he had one moment in that exchange where he looked over to Pence and he said, "You and Donald Trump don't trust women to make that decision. Why don't you trust women to make that decision?" Pence, for his part, this is a huge issue for him. It's one of the things he was, you know, best known for in the House of Representatives, where he spent 12 years before he was governor. It's been kind of a guiding light for his entire political career. He described himself as a Christian first, then a conservative, then a Republican. The issue of abortion and other social conservative issues important to Christian conservatives have been, you know, kind of at the forefront of his agenda, whether it's as governor or whether it's in Congress. So I think Pence was in an interesting position here because, you know, he is the liaison for Trump to these wings of the party that don't necessarily trust him, including social conservatives. But abortion is not an issue Trump pretty much ever brings up on the campaign trail. It's not an issue that drives him. As far back as 1999, he described himself as very pro-choice, and as there's just little in his record to suggest that he passionately cares about that issue. So that's one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons Pence was there. And you know, Pence was pretty eloquent in talking about his support for his support for the life of the unborn.
They even brought up the Hyde Amendment, and Kaine supported the Hyde Amendment.
Right. No, that's a great point, because Kaine has been playing both sides of that issue. He's been saying that, he's long been a supporter of the Hyde Amendment, which we should tell your listeners prohibits federal taxpayer funding for abortion, mostly through Medicaid. And so Kaine says he personally supports the Hyde Amendment to restrict that. But Hillary Clinton has taken a break from past positions of her party's nominees by saying she wants to repeal the Hyde Amendment. And Kaine has said he's going to stand with her on that, even while he personally opposes it. So what's unclear, what I'd like to know, is how he would vote, you know, if he were the tie-breaking vote in the Senate as vice president on a spending bill that didn't have the Hyde Amendment. Would he vote for that? He's never answered that.
And here's Terry, who writes, "I watched about 15 minutes of the debate before I just had to turn it off. My impression was that Pence is an adult, whereas Kaine is a tedious, egotistical man boy who thinks he knows more than he does, reminding me of many of those I work with in Silicon Valley." And another listener says, "Mike Pence and Trump keep complaining that the Clinton campaign keeps lobbing insults at the Trump campaign. It's not an insult if the words being lobbed at them are their own words." And let me bring another caller on. And Georgette, thank you for waiting. You're on.
Yes, my name is Georgette. This is my first time calling NPR. I just wanted to say that to me it seems that we are where this country was 400 years ago, and all this, the same recipe they had to create a civil war. It's since Obama's election, it's clear that this country is divided and that there are two sides. And it seems to me that there is the side that is willing to tolerate and perhaps continue discrimination and injustice, and then there is a side that is saying, let's move towards a change and let's not tolerate any of it in any form anymore. I just heard something earlier that you were playing today about the monument in Germany that was constructed, I think, or chosen by Hitler, and that they've chosen to keep it going and not have it be destroyed and made into something else. It's this time in the world where people have to make a choice. It's 2016. There's a certain history behind us, and there's a history in front of us that's yet to be known. But are we going to choose to eliminate certain things, or are we going to continue and persist ideas? And this, to me, just shows that this is where this nation is divided, and this is what creates a civil war. And it bothers me extremely that we're even at this point.
Well, Georgette, I understand your concern, and I thank you for expressing it, and I appreciate the call. And I want to get as many of you on here as I can, so let me go to another caller. This is Ross. Ross, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
So I didn't mind the interruptions so much last night, and I think part of the discussion here is focusing on, of the interruptions, is focusing on appearances. So we can have a civil debate, civil-sounding debate that is still full of lies and half-truths and is condescending to the American people listening to it, or we can have a debate that's full of interruptions and truth and facts, and it seems difficult to listen to, but it's really, you know, more honest about the issues we're facing. So I don't think it's as simple as turning somebody's mic off or, you know, whether people are interrupting or not. I think it's a much more complicated thing that people have to sit through.
All right. And I thank you for weighing in with your opinion. We'll go to more calls in a moment. But let me go back to Jennifer Morola, again, who is professor of political science at the University of California, Riverside. I'm all too mindful historically of shows how my age figures into how I see things. But the race between Barry Goldwater and Lyndon Baines Johnson, and that was a race which probably was completely, well, set in stone, almost, if you will, for Johnson's victory when Goldwater came out with those advertisements with the young girl and the nuclear mushroom cloud over her head. There was some bandying about last night about the nuclear issue, and I found it fascinating just to the sense that the American people's response doesn't seem to be quite obviously what it was back in the Goldwater-Johnson era, but it's been a point from the Democrats through Hillary Clinton's debate against Donald Trump and now once again last night. How much do we weigh this in this campaign, Jennifer Morola?
Well, I mean, I agree. It's, you know, it was very salient way back in the race that you were mentioning. Today, we know that there's, you know, foreign policy has been so salient throughout this election cycle, in part because of all the terrorist attacks that have happened around the globe. People are also worried about, you know, certain countries getting access to nuclear weapons. You know, the Democrats have tried to kind of play up this concern. Do you really want Donald Trump, right, to have the nuclear codes, right? He's, you know, his temperament isn't fit, right, for someone who would have those nuclear codes. But the American public isn't necessarily primarily concerned with these issues, right? With each terrorist attack that's happened, the concern of, you know, terrorism as being one of the top issues goes up a little bit, but then it goes back down. You know, the American public, that isn't the main issue in the election. And so, you know, I think what you find often in campaigns is that they try to throw a whole bunch of different issues and topics onto the wall, right? Kind of like spaghetti. And you see what sticks. And some things stick and some things don't. And you try to run with the things that seem to gain a little bit more traction. And so maybe with certain voters who are older and remember, right, those elections, you know, these claims about nuclear codes, concerns about nuclear issues do play well, right? But it would only be really that segment of the electorate that's really concerned about that.
But I read Darren Samuelson, an article you did with Danny Venick, and you said that Cain was spot on declaring Trump had called for nuclear proliferation.
Yeah, there are certainly things that both of them said last night that were indeed well within the bounds of the truth. So they, you know, they do have a tendency, as they're saying what they're saying, to come at some points in a way that, you know, is spot on. I don't think that that's because of the fact checkers per se that are watching them as close as they are. But you know, it is inevitable on a stage in 90 minutes with the spotlight on you that you're going to make some flubs. You're going to push things beyond where they're, you know, where they should go. And I think that you know, the nuclear proliferation argument was one of them that you certainly, you know, got to a point where
you know, he was saying things that, you know, that Trump has said. I think Trump has said, you know, that Japan should defend itself against nuclear Korea, including with nukes. He said it again to the New York Times. There's been some allusion that Saudi Arabia might need to respond as well with a nuclear bomb. So, yeah, you do see in some of these attacks that they actually do get it right, and that's good for the voters out there.
But let me go back, Sahil Kapoor, to you on this, and again, Sahil Kapoor is national political reporter for Bloomberg. How much does this issue weigh in now with the American people as you see it? Sahil Kapoor?
Hi, sorry about that. The issue, I think, matters to the extent that Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine are trying to highlight that Trump has taken positions. It's ultimately about the temperament issue. So they're highlighting the fact that Trump has said he's open to letting South Korea and Japan and possibly Saudi Arabia build nuclear weapons, which is part of his whole, you know, vision of retreating from the world a little bit and letting other countries handle their own safety and withdrawing from stuff like NATO. But I think the nuclear issue, that policy itself is, you know, matters to the extent that Clinton and Kaine are trying to drive home a point that Donald Trump is not qualified to sit in that office, that he's not thought through these decisions, and that he hasn't, you know, seriously considered the impact of nuclear proliferation. And the interesting thing about that is when Trump was asked about it, he answered it in a way, you know, he was saying like, sure, yeah, why not? It wasn't, you know, it didn't come off as you know, a well thought out policy position that he had weighed the pros and cons and arrived at a conclusion here. So that's what Hillary Clinton is trying to highlight, that a lot of the things he's saying about foreign policy may not be fully considered.
We will have to leave it there. Thank you, Sahil Kapoor from Bloomberg. Thank you, Darren Samuelson from Politico. And thank you, Jennifer Marola from UC Riverside. Thank you, our listeners. Another hour ahead, we're going to talk about women in politics. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.